You are listening to episode number 301 of the Mighty Warriors Three Marvel Podcast. Holy shit, how did we get here? Welcome to episode number 301 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Wow. It still doesn't feel real to say that we've lapped 300 episodes. Like, honestly, it doesn't. But holy cow. I am your showrunner there, Bri, bringing you all the good news. With us, as always, is the OG founder of this show, the Marvelous Iggy, a.k.a. Benjamin. Ben, welcome to the show.
Rawr!
Run! It's Gojira!
I saw somebody posted from Tokyo that they have a Godzilla Christmas tree, and I have never wanted a new Christmas tree in my life. I need
that. Oh, they need to release that in America. That would be so dope.
I saw how much it would be. It's too much money to be spending on a Christmas tree. I would leave it up all year round just to justify it.
Seriously. Oh, my God. It'd be so cool. Just take the lights off and move it outside as, like, lawn art for the rest of the year.
That'd be great.
And joining us also from the bowels of New York City, it's the man known only as Taser. Taser, welcome to the show.
Yeah, right now I'm playing Daredevil because I'm blind. Stupid doctors and their stupid chemicals and stupid. I can't see a damn thing.
Are you also a lawyer defending the rights of the poverty stricken?
Yeah, yes. My law degree is as valid as Kim Kardashian's.
Hey. Oh my God. I got into a huge I revealed some information, I guess, to a friend of mine. She's a law student. She wants to, you know, she's waiting to become a full lawyer. And she read that and she's like, "Kim hasn't gone to law school," because she's also all up on the Instagram and stuff. And I'm like, "Yeah, California is one of four states where you don't actually have to attend law school in order to get a law degree. You can just have relevant experience in a law firm as like a paralegal and you get a degree." So
oh, I tell you what, kind of served.
Yeah, that's basically it. So if that doesn't tell you what kind of lawyers are operating out there in California, I would, be wary. Be wary of who you hire. But that being said, we are not a legal podcast. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel, be it comic books, movies, television show, video games,
tokusatsu,
pornography on occasion. You know, we've gone there before. I just want to kick things off quickly, though, by sort of just announcing a small piece of news. I posted the article in the chat there that they recently sold the first issue of Marvel Comics, like Marvel Comics number one, published back in 1939. It was near mint and sold for $1.26 million. Yeah, it was like, I think I heard they graded like a 9.6. Which, for a book from, like, the 30s, that is amazing to have that level of quality in a book.
So, wait a minute. Where was this thing kept? In, like, a vacuum chamber?
No idea.
Like cellophane?
Yeah, I honestly have no idea how it was so well, like, conditioned and stuff.
Holy
But,
heck.
Yeah, it sold for $1.26 million to an anonymous bidder in the great state of Texas. They did release that much, based out of Dallas. So, Ben, we need you to get on that so you can find the issue and bring it home for us, if you'd be so kind, sir. We need you to find the issue of Marvel Comics that sold to a buyer in Dallas. We need you to
find
it.
Bitch, you think I'm Mexican just because I steal shit? That's racist.
What? Yes. No, I'm saying you have to find the buyer who
I'm
did it.
I'm saying you need to find the comic. The hell with the buyer. Just use some of those skills.
I'm going to C2E2, so maybe I'll do some sleuthing.
All right, fair enough. You do what you can for us now.
He'll actually find the person there with, you know, "Yes, I bought that comic. It is me. Come give me accolades." Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, but that being said, we do have some news to transition into as far as the comic book side of things goes. And speaking of Godzilla, and also, you may have noticed our dearest friend John is not with us. But we're going to just kind of trample all over his missing spot by talking about stuff he loves without him being here. Because that's what friends do. To kick off our comic book segment, all new Ultraman stories are going to be published by Marvel Comics in a joint production with Tsuburaya, I believe it is.
Ultra what?
Ultraman.
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 So you He's mean this man. Silver guy with the fish head thing and the big googly
eyes? He
kind of
looks like a knockoff Iron Man a little bit, you know, if Iron Man had a flair for Japanese design, I guess. You know?
You've got to be kidding me. Marvel bought that? Or at least some Marvel made a deal or something with whoever.
Yeah, it's a collaboration between the guy who holds the publishing rights, Tsuburaya Productions. And it was unveiled at Tokyo Comic Con, and it's going to launch sometime next year in 2020.
Oh, so you know what needs to happen now, right? They need to take and add Godzilla and the Shogun Warriors to one single issue, have Ultraman, the Shogun Warriors, and Godzilla all in the same issue and make it a three-parter. Yes,
well, you
that
know,
needs
they
to
just...
happen.
They teamed up a couple of years ago to do a crossover with Attack on Titan in the Marvel Comics universe. So
right,
they could
right.
just
that was weird.
Probably
yeah,
something like
yeah.
I didn't say it was good. I just said it happened. You know, whether or not it was of quality remains to be seen.
It was probably better
but
than
yeah.
the movie, at least.
Yeah. But yeah, not much else is known about it right now. But it does showcase some very lovely Alex Ross artwork on the cover. So, you know, that's always nice.
Oh, you know John John's going to read that.
Yeah, that, oh, that, of course he's gonna be all over that shit.
And I'm going to be here to shoot it down.
Okay. Also in comic book news is
hold on, I didn't say shit.
Oh right. I am so sorry, Benjamin. Please go ahead. What are your feelings on the Ultraman Marvel Comics production?
I think it's interesting. I think it's weird. I think it's definitely a hand in the Japanese company because they're trying to make Ultraman relevant again. If you aren't aware, there's a Ultraman Netflix anime on right now. It's been on for a while now, and there's a season 2 coming next year. I watched it. It's all right. It's nothing great.
I mean, I thought that was supposed to be a live-action show. It's animated?
It was anime. I don't know if there is a live action. They are doing the people who directed the directors behind Shin Godzilla, which everybody should watch, are making a Shin Ultraman, whatever that means. So I think the whoever owns Ultraman wants to make him relevant again and doing whatever they can. So I mean the Netflix anime is whatever. It's just watch it in Japanese. Don't watch it in English. You know, now you have this, and maybe the new movie will take off as well as Shin Godzilla did. I have no idea, but hey, good luck trying to make Ultraman relevant again when everybody's just going to call him a Power Rangers ripoff because you have people don't understand that things happened before 1993. I'm looking at you, Brian.
I'm sorry, what was that? I couldn't hear you over the sound of Power Rangers. You know, all that stuff going on.
Well, John, like the 90s. Ear looking next time.
Yeah, I don't want that. It's not my fetish. I didn't pay for this. Fucking A. But yeah, in case you missed it, it's like a 1995 Power Rangers toy commercial in my head, like 24/7. So, you know. I guess
Sarah.
It could be.
Go
what
to
is
Tyrannosaurus.
That? I always like the Triceratops the best, personally.
Oh, so you're a Billy fan. Fair enough.
I was a Billy fan. I like to think most people were because, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but Power Rangers appealed to a lot of geeky and nerdy kids, I like to think.
Did
you know.
Wear overalls and have glasses?
No. I didn't have to wear glasses until well after I was done with my Power Rangers phase.
But
you know what? He was the dopest in my mind because 9 times out of 10, what saved the day? Strategy and thinking. And you know what? Billy was that guy. Plus, you know, I mean, I don't know. Jason just never appealed to me as a person, I guess. But
hey,
that's
look,
neither here nor there.
The best one there was Rocky.
Fuck Rocky. Rocky was awful.
Rocky was the best one ever.
Rocky purposely, like, okay, no, Rocky got put under, like, a spell once and just was forced to play a pinball game. And when he was
machine.
Trying to.
It wasn't his fault.
He was trying to study, or Billy was trying to get him to study, and he just kept telling Billy to shut up, I'm having fun, and he just go back to playing pinball the entire time while there's monsters rampaging around the
yes,
city.
Yes, because pachinko machines are a worthwhile expenditure of time, and Billy was Billy.
Well, remember this, Rocky's the one who hurt his back because he was doing something dumbassery, and that caused him to miss out on the second movie, Lee Dedham.
And it caused him to replace him with Justin, the child who became a Power Ranger.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And the
God
one
forbid.
Who people
yeah, nobody liked
forget
Justin.
All about now. Yeah, nobody liked Justin.
Nobody likes Justin.
He ended up on
Earth. Everybody was happy when his ass got left on Earth when they went into in space.
Oh, when he got left and was left watching the rocket, I was just like, ha, ha, ha. Yeah, you bastard.
So
oh,
did
but we are not
Skull,
a...
if I remember correctly. Bulk made it and Skull got left behind. Dumbass.
Yeah, I think that happened later on, but that's
no, that was probably oh no, I'm thinking of Lost Galaxy. I'm sorry, Lost Galaxy.
That's the one. That's the one. But yeah, we're not. What was that Power Rangers podcast that our friends did for a little while there? What's that called? We are not that podcast, contrary to popular belief. We are in fact Marvel, so we're gonna keep on trucking, I guess. They've announced a new Spider-Woman series debuting next spring to be written by Carla Pacheco, who did the Punisher annual issue recently, as well as she'll be doing Fantastic Four 2099, and to be illustrated by Pere Perez, who's on Uncanny X-Men, or he was on Uncanny X-Men a little while ago. And yeah, so it's gonna be an espionage spy thriller type thing, taking her back to the Shield Hydra roots of her creation and stuff like that. So no mention as to whether or not the baby will show up. I don't know if they're carrying that over or what's happening there. I haven't been following anything with the character too closely. I don't know if either of you can say the same or speak differently about it.
For what are we talking about?
Spider-Woman. She's getting a new series in spring.
She's still a mom, right?
That's what I was asking. I didn't know if she's still had the kid or not.
She's been out of... I know she... When I stopped reading it because I just realized I didn't care about Carol Danvers that much. Yeah. I know she was in there. I just don't like. It's no like. It just. I don't care her. I don't care about her outside of an Avengers capacity.
That's fair.
But like, I remember she was there, but I don't remember. But she didn't have to have the kid. Like, she could have let the kid babysit or something. I hope she's still a mom because that would be fucked up to like have that story and she's not a mom anymore.
It would have been. Like, I mean, they could make something out of it. Like maybe she gave the child up to like give it a better, more peaceful life or something.
That would be weird because she was very loving of that child.
Yeah, and they never went into detail about who the father was, did they? I don't think they ever revealed that.
They might have. I know the dude, like the villain Porcupine, kind of became like the surrogate father. Like they weren't like in a relationship. Wow. I don't think they were.
Right.
But there was like, you're just a nice guy to have around, and you take care of my kid. So.
Yeah, it's. That's
wow,
fair.
So she found a beta to take care of her kid while she did, you know, alpha.
Oh, don't get into that red pill, blue pill crap. Come on
now.
No.
What I'm saying is this. She let a guy who she wasn't interested in look after the kid because Porcupine at this point isn't even a Z-list villain.
No,
honest.
Nobody.
Thank you. So, I mean, what else would you call that? You know, she found a beta to take care of her kid while she went out and did her own thing. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And that's just kind of like, really?
Okay, so reading up on it, it looks like she was impregnated via a sperm bank. So there is no father at play here. So.
I mean, they could always, like, find out or something.
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
Yeah, later on she'll find out it's somehow Porcupine. And they lost it. They lost the information or something like that. It'll be some really weird roundabout way. Just watch.
And to your point, Ben, it looks like she actually does enter into a relationship with Porcupine. So you know, fantastic. I'm glad we've learned this about Spider-Woman's backstory and character.
Did she go back to her original costume, or is she still wearing the nonsense?
Yeah, she's in the original red and black and stuff.
Yeah, she's not in the Netflix costume anymore.
Now, what do you possibly mean by that, Ben?
I mean, it just looks stupid realistic. It's like, why?
It wasn't a bad costume, but I mean, it was the costume they came up with because everybody complained about that one photo from that Italian artist. You know, and it's like, it's skin tight and it shows everything and it's anti-feminine and whatever. And okay. And it wasn't bad. I actually liked it, but it's like... It looked like it looked like Luke Cage's original costume. Something that you could go someplace and pick this, put it together, costume. You know?
It made it easier for cosplayers.
True. Very true. But hey, Spider-Woman, new book, Yay!
Sure, why
Yay.
Not? Also rolling out this February in 2020, there's going to be quarterly one-shots focusing on Fantastic Four characters, and one of them will focus on the ever-loving blue-eyed thing. It'll be called Fantastic Four Grim Noir, and it has been described as a noir showdown between the Thing and an old Doctor Strange foe called Despair, and it will take place having to do with Despair making his way onto Yancey Street, apparently, in New York. Written by Jerry Duggan, illustrated by Ron Garney. Ben, do you have any history with this character from Doctor Strange called Despair or anything like that?
He's an elder god.
Why am I the Doctor Strange expert, asshole?
Because you're the Doctor Strange expert, asshole.
All right, I'm going to pull an obscure Deadpool villain out of my ass next time we do this. I'm going to see if you know your shit. Okay.
You do that. You do that. Taser, you're the old encyclopedic librarian type guy.
No, I know of Despair because Despair had an entry in the first deluxe edition of the Marvel Universe guide. I think Despair is like on the level of Elder God, you know?
Let's see. I am looking at Wikipedia right now. He is a demon and one of the Fear Lords.
Yeah.
I don't know who the Fear Lords are.
I'm, you know, same thing. But
sure,
I mean,
why not?
This is something that's generally out of Ben's wheelhouse. You know, I mean,
it is.
Ben doesn't
Absolutely.
Really go after anything occultish. The FF doesn't really go after anything occultish. And Despair is kind of up there. So for him to go against this thing and do it solo, like, wow, okay. I that's got to be a really
That will be interesting to see.
It should be really interesting to see how it plays out. And you know what? They're probably going to go into Ben's past. Because, you know, demons love to fuck with your mind and play with your history. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So. Well, it's interesting you say that, because guess what else is coming back? The trench coat and the hat! Yeah, that's not
so,
as much
so wait. So he's,
climax.
Wait a minute. So is this going to be Ben who's trying to... excuse me. A Ben who's trying to hide himself from humanity? Or is it just going for the whole gumball thing?
Yeah, basically, it's like the gumshoe thing. Yeah, he's
okay,
Ben's trying to solve a mystery on Yancey Street, and it has to do with Despair, and he just throws on the hat and trench coat, and it's like a hard-boiled PI type thing.
So, you know, if they're doing the gumshoe thing, then you know there's going to be a whole lot of internal monologue.
Oh, God. I seen this guy walking down the street there, and he, you know. Well, I want to do it with a heavy, heavy Brooklyn accent. God, please.
Yeah, no... No.
No, okay. fair enough. Ben, any thoughts on Grim Noir? I apologize if I upset you with the inclination that you knew something about a minor Doctor Strange character. So.
Fuck you.
No, I'm legitimately apologizing. Like, come on, dude. No,
yeah,
do you have any feelings about this?
Really
Are you reading Fantastic Four right now, Ben?
No, I dropped that book like a hard rock. It just bored me.
Okay, fair enough, I guess. You know, I'm still reading it, so I'll probably pick this up. Okay, fair enough. Okay, and one more bit for the comic books. Apparently, Marvel debuted a bi-weekly podcast series called Marvel's Voices. I don't know if anybody knew about this here. Anybody?
Nope.
Okay, fair enough. Well, spinning out of that, apparently, will be a comic book that will be contributed to by writers and illustrators, you know, of all kinds, including Vida Ayala, Roxane Gay, Brian Stelfreeze, and Method Man, among others, I guess. It'll be a one-shot anthology series. You'll be able to see it'll just be like vignettes for each different kind of character and stuff. And apparently it's brokering for a lot of celebrity involvement, I guess, or for like people who don't regularly do comic books, I guess, to come in and kind of be able to do stories like one-offs and stuff like that. But yeah, apparently I didn't know anything about this, this podcast, but, Marvel's Voices will be in, comic book stores in February coming up. And seriously, the list of people involved is like too long for me to really get into. So you can go ahead and check that out. there's news about it that is broken. But yeah, suffice to say, it's an interesting kind of anthology bend to it. And I thought Method Man's inclusion was funny, but I really want to see him do like a Wu-Tang comic book or something. I want to see that so bad. Some lost faction of the Hand just chilling in New York and stuff like that.
That Come would on. Be, you know what, as a quick animated bit, that would be pretty interesting, you know? The whole of the Wu-Tang Clan, of course, you know, representing Shaolin Land, and you know, the hand trying to invade Staten Island. That's the shit that kind of gets me. Fucking Staten. I used to live in Staten Island. I lived in Staten Island for about 8 years. As a matter of fact, I lived not too far from where these guys came up, because I used to live on Park Hill, 180 Park Hill Avenue. You know, just that idea is, you know, holy shit. But
you hear that, Meth? You hear that?
M-E-T-H-O-D, man. Roxane Gay, who is that?
Roxane Gay. I don't have her work in front of me, but let me. Does the name sound familiar to you?
Not at all.
Not at all.
I thought they were calling somebody gay, to be perfectly honest.
Okay, Roxane Gay is an American writer, professor, editor, and commentator. Contributed to the New York Times, among other things. She's written about 4 or 5 books.
So we got a literature great here.
Yeah, just about. Yeah, she's written a few things, educated a few minds, so to speak. And of course, I mean, Brian Stelfreeze requires no real, you know. I mean, if you're in the know about comic books, you know who Brian Stelfreeze is. Most recently, he did the Black Panther series with Ta-Nehisi Coates. That was him doing the artwork on that one. You didn't read that?
Not really. And you know me, I don't pay attention to names too much, so, you know. But okay, yeah, fair enough, you know. Okay, so
yeah, and I'm trying to find out who this Vita Ayala is, but I can't find anything on them. So some things will just have to remain a mystery. But this, a couple of the marquee stories will focus on other pockets of the X-Men universe during the House of X, Powers of X, the return of Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. And it'll feature characters like Hulk and Wolverine squaring up, Black Panther, Killmonger, She-Hulk, Black Widow, Ant-Man, and others. So you can look for that to drop onto shelves in February of 2020. Moving right along, we have some news about Disney Plus. I feel like Disney Plus is going to become like a regular segment. God save
No, us. It's not.
All right, fair enough. Damn, okay, that was shut down real quick. Fuck, okay. Okay, I'll get the quickest bit out of the way first. There's a rumor floating around that Ironheart's reportedly in development at Disney Plus. For those of you who don't know, that was the series that spun out of Iron Man after Tony went like in the iron lung after Civil War II. And it featured a girl named Riri Williams, who was a young African-American girl who was super, super smart. And she made her own Iron Man suit with the help of like a Tony Stark AI type thing. So
she had help.
I mean, kind of, yeah. I didn't read the story, so I don't know all the details, but But I mean, that's unconfirmed by official sources. That's just reportedly like a tip, so no real word on whether or not we'll actually see it anytime soon. My bet would be no, but that remains to be seen. But yeah, so in that case, I mean, if you're into that character, I mean, Iron Man is technically dead, but I would just as soon throw in, I would just do something with Morgan, his daughter from the actual canonical, you know, Endgame. You know, that's just me. But yeah, so that's reportedly coming down the pipe.
That would actually be kind of cool to give that little girl an Iron Man suit and actually do adventures.
Really? Well, you know what? You laugh about that, but
no,
they're
I'm
setting up for the
serious.
Young Avengers. They have to.
I would watch that show. Little, she could be Ironheart. Little tiny, what would you say? She's like, what, 7, 8 years old?
Probably not even that.
Yeah, 5 about.
But you know what? Just write it off by saying that she's super. Just write it off by saying she's super intelligent, and that makes up for how young she is. You know, it works for a bunch of other shit. Why not her?
I just like the idea of a little kid running around in a workable Iron Man suit.
You're busted! Oh, God!
I busted you, 3000!
jeez. Oh, my goodness.
I'm sorry.
Oh, jeez. Okay, so that's reportedly in development. Also, we got our first look at a couple of things coming down the pipe. First and foremost was a few promotional stills from The Falcon and The Winter Soldier, which featured, among other things, a look at the concept art for U.S. Agent, a look at Falcon's new suit, and also Baron motherfucking Zemo in the purple mask. You're not excited about that? I was stoked when I saw that.
I'm looking at the mask now. I'm not all that impressed. Kind of disappointed.
Okay, so what would it... What was that,
it's
Ben?
It's a purple mask that looks kind of like Skeeish. It looks like his comic book version. The only thing it's missing is the crown.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, the only thing really missing is the crown. So, I mean, if you're looking to improve
that's probably it. It's just, it's not, I'm not impressed by what I'm seeing here. You know, so maybe if the crown is put on it, maybe that'll work for you. But other than that, it feels like Peter Parker, MCU Peter Parker's mask. Without the plastic things over the eyes, I'm not impressed. It's not doing it for me. Sorry. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's disappointing, but to each their own, I suppose. You know, Benjamin, any thoughts from you on the U.S. agent concept or Baron Zemo?
I'm not gonna lie, I only looked at the Baron Zemo stuff. I didn't look because I'm kind of.
It was just concept art, so it's nothing real earth shattering. Yeah. You know. But it does look like interesting workup for a U.S. agent, so I'll be interested to see how that kind of works it out. But I think it looks good, honestly. I think it looks like he could be a legitimate, you know, frenemy, I think, or a threat, depending on how they want to play the storyline, depending on what they do with it. Because we still don't know a ton about what the story is going to be. And, you know, for one thing, I'm glad about that, because Marvel has done the thing before where they've overplayed their hand a lot in certain things. So if they're willing to leave more of the plot a mystery, I'm all for that, I guess. But, I'm just glad they brought Daniel Brühl back. I guess they ran out of Nazis for him to play. So, you know, it's good to see he's still getting work. But, any last thoughts on that before we move on? No,
other than, you know, again, Zemo is the only one of the only villains who actually won. Yeah. So
fair enough.
Yeah, he achieved his goal. True enough.
All right. The only other thing I had up was a bunch of promotional clips they released revolving around Marvel's What If animated series. And I have to tell you, this shit looks fucking bomb. I don't know about y'all, but I am fucking stoked. Among the clips, what we see is T'Challa as Star-Lord in one of the What If specials. Yeah, you heard me right. Winter Soldier squaring up against zombie Captain America, which means we're probably getting Marvel zombies in Marvel What If, which I'm super excited for. We see a bit of a narration clip of The Watcher, voiced by Jeffrey Wright. And we also see Captain Peggy Carter as Super Soldier Serum inoculated Super Soldier, and pre-serum Steve Rogers, aka Little Steve Rogers, in the fucking promo. Which, like, why you gotta do Steve like that? You gotta call him Little Steve Rogers, really? Flying around in an Iron Man suit, so he becomes World War II era Iron Man, I guess, teaming up with Captain.
That's
the
thing
Carter.
From. What is it called? Bullet, I think. There's a miniseries that came out about 10 years ago that did that, where because Erskine was killed before he could get the Super Soldier Serum to Steve, and so, well, we have this experimental armor here, and he became Iron Man during World War II.
Really? I didn't know that.
Bullet. I think it's called Bullet Point. It was basically one bullet changes the Marvel Universe, and because Erskine wasn't able to Erskine was killed along with Uncle Ben Parker, who was his bodyguard, also gets killed. Peter Parker doesn't grow up with a good father figure, so he basically becomes an asshole. And he is actually, then that leads him to being a ruffian, and he goes into the Gamma Test Site, and he becomes the Hulk.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's freaking ballsy.
Yeah, and then so Steve Rogers ages normally. So Steve Rogers comes out of retirement one last time, even though it could kill him because, like, wearing the Iron Man suit takes obviously the older technology. He fights the Hulk and he dies.
Holy shit, really?
Yeah. Yeah, Hank Pym becomes Spider-Man. Doctor Strange becomes like Nick Fury because he doesn't go to Tibet. He goes signed with S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's like a trickle effect. Like some, and like, and some things change, some things stay the same, like, because like obviously it's not affected, but like a huge portion of the Marvel Universe. And it basically ends with Galactus coming, and there's no Fantastic Four at all. I think they died.
So no ultimate nullifier technology to stop Galactus.
So it basically ends with like all the heroes of the Marvel Universe at the time fighting Galactus, and Galactus is just mopping the floor with them. And then Hulk comes out, like Hulk, like Peter's living like Hulk's like banner with like in the desert, isolated and alone. And Hulk, and he basically sees that, and he transforms and goes to New York, and he takes on Galactus, and Galactus is just shooting beams, until Silver Surfer is like, okay, he's had enough. You know, there's the courage in humanity, and he makes Galactus go away. But the Hulk dies.
Wait a minute, so where's Reed Richards?
I don't remember exactly. I think, no, he becomes Nick Fury.
Because
something happens with the Fantastic Four. I think they're playing to sabotage, and everybody else dies but him. Reed Richards becomes like the Nick Fury character. Hank Pym experiments on himself to become Spider-Man. Doctor Strange never goes to Tibet. He just joins S.H.I.E.L.D. And Tony eventually becomes Iron Man. Like, he just wears the armor. But, like, he doesn't become Iron Man when he was supposed to. It's a really good read. Like, I recommend it. It's Tommy Lee Edwards on art. I have it somewhere. But it's a really good, like, it's probably one of the better alternate universe takes that the Marvel Universe has to offer.
Coolio. So then what do you think of what you have in front of you for, like, what-if stuff? Like, what is your guys' overall feeling on some of the content, the animation style, that sort of stuff?
I'm looking for it. I'm looking forward to it. I'm there. I am fully invested. Bring it on.
Wow. Okay.
I heard and Benjamin doesn't like it, though. And John sucks because he's John and he's a hater.
John likes little Japanese dudes running around in poorly constricted, zipper-up suits. So, you know, God forbid that someone actually likes something that isn't, you know, otaku, whatever the fuck he is. I don't know.
Yeah, we don't care about Modob. I think that is, wasn't that it, Modob?
Yes, it was Modob.
Yeah, so yeah, Modob sucks. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
All right, fair enough. All right, well, that is going to do it for the news for this week, and we are going to segue on into reviews. We got myself and Benjamin reviewing books. Taser has very politely abstained, and by politely abstained, I mean he said fuck off, but, you know, it's the same general idea. So, Benjamin, why don't you go ahead and kick us off there with Absolute Carnage number 5, The Madness Continues, in what you've touted as your favorite book so far this year.
Yeah, it's my favorite Marvel comic, and I'm saying that a book that features both Venom and Carnage. What is this year?
Yeah, that's that is like bizarro world-level shit from the Distinguished Competition.
It's the finale. Venom is officially put, or Eddie has, like, he has the codex of every single symbiote on Earth in him now, and it allows him to like do cool transformations with the symbiote that he could do before. And so this issue is kind of like, yay, they won, but they still lost. Because the whole point of this thing was for Carnage to get all the codex so they can wake up Null, the god of the symbiotes, who's in prison on the planet. And it's great. It's a great fight scene. It has that sort of like, oh fuck, they're screwed. And eventually they stop Carnage because Eddie's son, yes, Eddie Brock has a child. I think I said that before. Yeah, Eddie Brock has a child, who he's been with him this entire time, but he's been telling him Eddie is his older brother. He's been lying to him because he's like, I don't want this kid to know that I'm his dad. I'm a horrible person.
At least he acknowledges it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, he gets like, I think, not on purpose, Carnage kind of screams like that is your son's gonna see you die in front of you, Eddie, you know, like that kind of thing. So like,
yeah,
it's Carnage who says it. But he gets taken out by the kid who like has like the kid just all of a sudden has this symbiote go away power. Like, I just came out of nowhere. Like, wait, what?
So Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, they established that he has like some of the, because he's Eddie's son, and bits of the, so even if the symbiote leaves you, the symbiote will leave a little bit of in your DNA, even if it's not like all the way there, like it's there, sure. It's present. So some of that transferred onto him, so he has some of the Venom DNA inside of him. So that's probably where that came from. But it's all for naught because even though Eddie was preventing Carnage from assembling all the pieces, but because he assembled all the pieces of the codec together, it was enough to wake Null up. And Null, one of the best pages of this book are, it's an outshot of the planet of the symbiotes, and then it goes in, it zooms, like it's like a single page, and you see Null, and then you see his eyes, and then they open, and like Null is awake, and he's riding his Hell Dragon to Earth. So, and like Spider-Man, and like right after that, Spider-Man's going, did we win? Eddie, do you win? Not aware of this Null thing or whatever. And like Eddie can feel Null. Like he knows Null's coming. And Eddie's like, yeah, we won, Spidey. Yeah. And they hug it out. So yeah, it's one of those things where I'm like, oh, okay. Null's officially on his way. This is the first time he's been awake since like the dawn of creation. When he fought the Silver Surfer. So yeah, I can't wait for that. Like, it was still a great book. It's still a great horror book. I still enjoyed this overall, but I knew like this was only going to be the stop to Carnage and his shenanigans. But the real enemy, I mean, the real enemy has been Null this entire time since issue one. I've gone back and read the trade during this whole event thing. But yeah, so now Null is on his way. And I can't wait to see what happens next. I don't know when he's coming. They haven't announced, like, I figured they would announce, like, a Venom event or something like this. But they haven't said anything on it. But, yeah, I give it definitely a 4 out of 5. It's great. And I highly recommend anybody, if you're skeptical about Carnage or Venom and you think this sounds stupid, that's fine. But, like, if you were looking for a new cool mythos to fall in love with the Marvel Universe, try Venom. I never thought I would say that. I thought this character was done. I thought this character had run its course, and you really couldn't do anything interesting. And the only other interesting thing they'd done with him was the Agent Venom stuff, you know. But that's because it was more about the man, not the symbiote. But they managed to make the symbiote really fucking interesting to me. And I want to know where this goes and, you know, how it all ends for Eddie. 4 out of 5. I highly recommend Absolute Carnage a lot.
Oh, man, this really is a fucking backwards world. Next thing you know, his favorite run with Spider-Man's going to be Ben Reilly. And God,
that ain't never happening. Fuck you.
goodness. Okay, but one of my favorite runs going on right now is, and I'm sure John would echo this if he was here, is Immortal Hulk, written by Al Ewing. And illustrated, not by the usual guy, I think. Who was the artist on this one? Was it Joe Bennett, I think? Yes, it was Joe Bennett. So I don't know if you guys knew this, and Ben, I know, are you caught up to Immortal Hulk at this point?
No, I've only read the first trade.
All right, fair enough. Well, I'll leave out most of the details then. Suffice to say that originally, apparently, Al Ewing only intended the series to go for 25 issues. He intended to cap it there and walk off into the sunset, so to speak. Obviously, plans changed. The series was a lot more successful, I guess, than people had intended. So 26 is sort of the start of the next act of the Immortal Hulk. So suffice to say, most of this issue takes place as a result of what happens in the previous issue. I'm not going to spoil it for you, Ben. I'll try and keep it out. But it's not really drawing upon all that. It's more Bruce coming to terms with what's been happening with him in the past. And he actually, most of this is contained within a diner. Actually, it was funny enough. It was a diner in Massachusetts, which I kind of loved. So basically, you have Bruce sitting down for a cup of the clam chowder there, seriously, in a diner and talking with Amadeus Cho. And, you know, Bruce is, like I said, he's dealing with a lot of the fallout from the previous stuff, which includes blowback in the media from the Avengers and that sort of stuff. And it's actually sort of takes it piece by piece, because you also have characters who make their appearance here, you know, like Samson is there. Obviously, I said Amadeus Cho, the young reporter who has been trailing, you know, Bruce around, Jackie, You know, she is sort of brought back into the fold. And one thing I really like about this is that it gears up and it sort of sets up the next stage of what's going to happen here. Because after what happens, Bruce kind of puts a call out. He does like a pirate radio broadcast type thing to humanity and makes them understand that the world they're living in is manufactured. People, corporations manufacture disaster, manufacture horrible things or people, and they profit off of it. And actually sets up Taser, I don't know if you're going to be into this, sets up the next person who Hulk is going to try and take down, which is Roxxon and Dario Agger, a.k.a. the Minotaur. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So, but one thing I really like, though, and one thing that Al Ewing does really well, is that it sort of goes through and paints the general perception of the Hulk after this pirate broadcast of him calling out sort of humanity and like, this is the world we live in. You know, this corporation is manufacturing misery for profit. And what you see is all of the Roxxon affiliated news outlets, which is not so subtly put up as Rox News. It's R-O-X-X. It's not so subtle. But
I wonder what they're trying to say there.
I don't know. I'm stumped, honestly. but suffice to say that what it does is it sort of takes a look at, you know, corporate-owned media, corporate-owned news, and sort of how once these people sort of get their roots in, it's hard to shake out whether or not they're actually an unbiased news source or if they're doing it strictly for the bottom line, which in this case they most definitely are, obviously. And one thing that you see at the end, as I mentioned, is that Dario Agger, the Minotaur, calls a board meeting at Roxxon and he basically says, okay, look, we're in a position here. And be in mind, he has his board meeting as a Minotaur in a suit and tie. So there's that as well. But what he says is he goes back to the War of the Realms where he's like, we backed the elves, plain and simple. It was clear as day, treason in any other sense of the word. And do you know what happened? Nothing. Couple petitions, some think pieces online, a few protests of our more obvious affiliates, but by and large, we're still rich and powerful, so who the fuck cares anymore? And so he's basically contented to come out and just chill in a suit and tie as a Minotaur and bet that nobody will care and that he's going to take on the Hulk directly, Hulk and company. Like, legit, he is just setting up to knock down the fucking Hulk.
Oh my gosh.
But one recent entry into the series that I really enjoy, and one that I didn't necessarily see it coming, but you know something's up. You know, Bruce is chilling in this diner having this cup of chowder, and he and Amadeus are talking, and the entire time it's just Bruce, Amadeus, and this cook who's been, you know, who's working in the back. And suffice to say, things don't go well with Amadeus, and he takes off and he says, "Look, Bruce, you know, I'll be watching you. So if this doesn't end well, you better know that I'm going to hold you accountable because I'm still a hero. You know, Amadeus is still playing the hero route, not so much the Hulk smash." But one thing I love is that the chef comes out and hands him a cup of tea, and it's revealed to be Namor, who's just been chilling out in the back this whole time in a chef's hat. And he's just like, "Yeah, you did the best you could with that, kid. Now let me give you my advice about how to handle this thing." And the very next page is Bruce declaring war on Roxxon. Very next page. It's like, oh my god, really? Like, that is the advice you would expect to get from fucking Namor of all people. Keeping in mind that Namor this whole time had been cooking him clam chowder, saying it's his father's old recipe and that all the clams were hand caught. And so what you see is,
you could really believe that. I mean, let's be honest.
Oh, absolutely. I just think it's funny because it's literally Namor in like an apron and a chef's hat just back there working. You never see his face until he comes out. And then he's like, oh, the king of the seven seas has just been chilling out. And now he's like, here's what you got to do, Brucey. You got to declare war on him, see? Otherwise, I'll never take you seriously.
Hold on, wait. Is he sporting the beard and mustache, or is he clean shaven? Because I buy the beard and mustache.
No beard and mustache, clean shaven. However, I will say that he has more of his mullet look back. He has longer hair than he typically has.
All right.
And he's sporting a gold earring because that look is still in style, I guess.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. If you want, you can go check it. I recommend you give it a look, if not for nothing else in the Namor bit, because that's always fun. Because, you know, him and Bruce are kind of like, you know, he's like, you know, I mean, I don't know if I would have thought Amadeus reacted that way. Namor, you know, we were a team once. And then Namor's like, well, we were never quite a team, but we were always a very excellent non-team, you know? It's like, but yeah, so that's Immortal Hulk number 26, really setting up the next leg of the Hulk's journey here. And honestly, I think it'll be as strong, if not better, than the stuff that came before. I think Ewing is a master of his craft at this point, in terms of telling the story that he wants to tell with the Incredible Hulk. So I'm willing to wait and see how this plays out, but this transitional issue has been very, very good. I will admit, issue number 25 left me a little bit perplexed. You'll understand what I mean by that, Ben, once you get to number 25. But suffice to say, this is a very strong bounce back issue. I imagine some of the stuff in 25 probably had a change from being the definitive ending into a more open-ended one to set up what comes next. But this was a very strong issue, very strong playing on the interpersonal relationships of people who have been affected by Gamma, and, you know, calling on that old Marvel history, which Ewing does know, and bringing in some of the newer stuff as well. I can't wait to see the Hulk square up against Dario fucking Agger, the Minotaur of all people. So, but yeah, that's what's to come. I give it a 4.5 out of 5 easy. You know, I really think it was strong, strong stuff here. So yeah, I'll take that, and that'll pretty much be my review. Damn, which already brings us to the end of the episode. Wow. I guess that makes sense. You know, we had a longish episode last week or a couple weeks ago for 300. Shorter week this time out. That makes sense, I guess. But yeah, that is going to do it for us here at the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast for this week. And that being said, we do have some responsibilities before we let you go. We are on the Facebook at the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. You can like us over there and follow us for all the best news. We are an aggregator, which means what, Taser?
We steal stories.
Lies. Lies and slander. Actually, no, that's not true. Slander is spoken and print, it's libel. So libelous lies. Yeah. But yeah, we give you a steady, dedicated stream of all the best news stuffs. We'll even pick through the clickbaity headlines for you. We do that for you at no extra cost because we love you, dear fan base. And, you know, you can follow us there to get all the news. We'll even share funny memes and fan art and stuff like that. You know, we don't try to pigeonhole ourselves. You can also get our mostly complete archives over at thewarriors3.wordpress.com. So if you want to hear what we sounded like back in, what, 2010? 2011, you can do that. Don't know why you would, but hey, it's always an option.
We sounded young and fresh.
You can find our freezing cold takes on things that we've completely reversed course on, you know, done a complete about face on, if you want to really drag our nose through it, you know. Because there have been some things, suffice to say. I remember back when X-Men First Class was building, and we were all like, this is going to suck. Yeah. This is awful. And then it turned out to be one of the best X-Men films of all time. Go fucking
figure.
Yeah, that
was a huge reversal for me. I was so on the fence. I had sniper's rifle out, just ready to take. Oh, shit, I actually like this movie.
Yeah, so you can go listen to our freezing cold takes over there, you know, if you'd like. You can also subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts if you'd like. You get our new updates there. You can rate us favorably and leave a kind word in review if you would like to. You know, no pressure, but it would always do good for us. And that being said, you can follow me personally over on Twitter at NoMrPowers. That's at @NO_MR_POWERS. Benjamin, you have stuff going on outside the podcast. What's going on in your world, buddy?
Twitter.com/MarvelC, and you can go to thecharge.com where I do a gaming podcast every Friday with a couple of really cool dudes.
Yeah, I think I know one of those dudes. Justin, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, Justin's a good dude. So go listen to the Charge Shot podcast, ladies and gentlemen. It's good stuff. Good stuff. Taser, anything you would like to plug, sir?
Yeah, I'm trying to, you know, put our presence out there on the aminos, both the comic and the Marvel aminos. So I put our show on there a few times, and, you know, I've made one or two blog posts of basically Marvel memes because, you know, I don't really have a whole lot to say, but I want to share some fun. So,
make you see fun me on for the there, kid.
You know, you see the guy with the the Bruce Lee and the Green Lantern background. Yeah, that's me. and say hi or say your show is shit or, you know, whatever. You know, it's up to you.
As long as we're keeping the conversation going and you're talking to us, we'd love to hear from you.
And send us money.
I mean,
or donuts.
Sure,
money or donuts. We'll take either.
I would actually kill for some donuts, depending on what kind of donuts you're talking about here, because I know regionally there's some differences there. I don't know about y'all, but
I'll take either Dunkin' Donuts or Krispy Kreme.
I had, when I went to Chicago for the first time, I had never seen so many Dunkin' Donuts so close to fucking together.
Oh, you should come to Massachusetts sometime, my friend. Holy fuck, there's three within a block of each other where I live.
That's stupid.
Where
that is fucking joke.
Oh, wow.
because when there's too long of a line at one, you can just go to the other one.
Why would there be a long line? I refuse to believe your donuts are that good.
You know, well, no, there's the coffee like and breakfast Black sandwiches. Joke. That sounds like a Lewis Black joke. He did that, except he did it with Starbucks. It was a Starbucks across the street from another Starbucks.
I was actually thinking of a Family Guy joke about that one. Way, way back in the day where the world was destroyed in a nuclear apocalypse because of Y2K. And ooh, Chris is like, wow. We can build a settlement with it.
That was first run of the show. Holy shit.
Yeah, we can build a place. We can build two Denny's so that when we go to one, we can say, "Oh, let's not go to that one. Let's go to the good one and go across the street to the other Denny's." Oh my goodness! But yeah, that is gonna do it for us here at the Mighty Warriors Theme Marvel Podcast. We will see y'all again next time, hopefully with John in tow. Wishing him a speedy recovery. You better eat those Whoppers to get big and strong, there, Jonathan. And Benjamin, you have a tagline. What do we say to the people at the end of every single show?
No matter what, happy Thanksgiving.